So every product that we use goes through development, testing, quality assurance, before they even begin promoting it and it hits the open market. Video games not only are no exception, but actually may go through more stringent testing than other products. A number of recent games, Mass Effect Andromeda comes to mind, have hit the market too soon, full of glitches and patches and downloadable content have had to be created to fix the problems, when maybe if they had just taken a little more time to get it right, it would have been preferable. Gamers often complain, but do we really understand what goes into making these games that we enjoy playing so much? My guest today is Colin Campbell, developer, scripter, quality assurance tester for a wide variety of video games. I'm George Brooks. This is The Games Afoot, where gaming means business. Welcome to the program, and welcome to the program, Colin. How are you?
Thank you, Mr. Brooks. Good to be here.
So, let's get right into it. Mm-hmm. Your bio on Mobi says that you worked in newspapers for many years before moving into the gaming industry, and that actually helped create a niche for you within that. How do you go from newspaper to video games? Like, how does that happen?
Well, it's all media. You've got deadlines. You've got a number of different people working on the same product, and that people have to correlate with each other. So you're talking about different departments. So just like you'd have a media department that would handle photography, and you'd have one that handled advertising, we have our art department, we have our development department, our programmer department. And what happened in the old days was they would have the programmers test these games themselves, and they found they were investing too many hours into playing the game when they needed programs to actually program. So quality assurance was born. What I did at the newspapers was check advertising copy. So anytime someone faxed in something for the classified advertisements, for some reason they weren't using Craigslist at the time, but I would be checking that for spelling errors, anything like that. So that was quality assurance in itself.
Okay.
And when I got into the industry, what I had found out is there were a lot of people a little few years younger than me, because I got in when I was 30, and usually it's something you get into in your teens or 20s. They couldn't spell. They were hooked on phonics. And that's essentially – no, what happened was grade school switched over to phonics, and they could learn to read much quicker, but they couldn't spell nearly as well as they could on sight and sound, which was the old method. And we were back to sight and sound again, so now we have people that can spell again. But for a long while, just we had somebody that just couldn't proofread a game, and that's when I came in. Found my niche there.
Anybody who spent a significant amount of time on social media knows that spelling
is still a problem. Terrible. Even when you got, like I said, even when you get that little red underline that tells you the words wrong, some people just defy it, say, "Nope, I'm typing it anyway."
So, understandably, you don't want the programmers testing the games themselves. I mean, it's pretty much the same reason why you don't usually have the director edit their own film. It's a lot harder to make corrections when you're the one doing the program. You're like, I don't want to take that out. I like that. I that's me. But so what exactly would a quality assurance tester do? Did you actually play the games themselves, or did you just go through and look for mistakes while other people were playing?
It's the common thought on the matter is, oh, well, that must be great to play video games all day. That would be great if that was my job. My job is usually to play one video game that's broken all day long.
Ah.
And when it starts to be playable and we can actually bring it out to market, that's usually when I get laid off or get sent to another project. So no, it's not quite as glamorous as all that. But you are definitely playing a solid 8 hours a day at minimum. Sometimes you play excess of 10 or 12. And you are essentially looking for bugs, as you said, errors within the game. Initially, when you're in what we call alpha stage and the game is playable but very incomplete, you're looking at places where it's breaking and then sending the information, whatever dump stack or whatever log you have, to the programmers, and they usually know what the problem is right away.
Okay. So, yeah, I used to live in Orlando, Florida, right near the EA Sports complex there. And they were always looking for testers for NBA Live and Madden and stuff like that. And just, I thought about applying, but I never did because I really enjoy playing Madden. And I think playing a broken version that it's my job to make notes and help them fix would just annoy me. Because
yeah.
You don't want to sit there and play a game and go, why does it keep doing that?
Yeah, not only that, but what they would call legacy bugs, which is if something was broken in the original game, but no one, you know, they still released and got a good feedback and monetary bottom line from it. That was it. That was a legacy bug, and it would stay in the game. So you could come in there going, hey, there was this bug I used to always bother me in the original game. And they go, oh, sorry, that's a legacy bug. It's staying in. You know, they don't want to unravel the code any more than they have to.
Okay. So
they'd rather, I mean, especially with EA, they're all about, let's just change the numbers. Let's update the jerseys, and let's update who got traded and who got sent to jail and all that other good stuff. And then we'll just re-release the game.
Tweak the targeting system a little bit or something like that. And that's, but yeah, because, I mean, really, the game hasn't changed that much in the last few years. Every year, like, they'll change how you kick. Like, one time you use the toggle, and then other times you use the buttons, and they just flip back and forth. But the game really doesn't change that much. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
So when you first got into the video game industry, like, what were some of the games that they had you working on?
Well, the first job I had was in Long Beach. I'd just gotten out of a data entry job, and I was really just looking for something else. The guy was downtown, and he said he was looking for someone to help with the programmers and everything. First thing I told him on the phone is I'm not a programmer and really had no intention of becoming one. He said, it's fine. He was looking at the time. They were looking for somebody that would plop in a CD, and the CD would start up, and they had a script that would auto-install the game. They called it drop-and-play technology. Inside the office, we called it drop-and-pray technology because it often broke. And I would write in where it broke and everything like that. The irony on this is the person who trained me was—he was already slacking off. Apparently, he'd only been there 4 hours that week, and it was already Wednesday. And he trained me for about an hour, and then he said, "Hey, I gotta go," and he bailed out. And I just stayed there working the rest of the day. Next day, they fired him. So it's what I refer to as the Darth Vader style promotion. They basically force choked the guy behind me and said, "You are now the QA manager, Mr. Campbell." And I said, "Thank you, Lord Vader," and went right back to work.
That would confuse, like, I don't understand how you come into work, you only work a few hours, then you leave early, and they tell you, hey, can you train this guy to do your job? And you don't see that coming.
Yeah, I think they told him at the time, well, you know, we have a lot of games coming in. We want to make sure we get as many as possible, and we feel it'd be better with two people there. And they ended up hiring somebody after me. So technically they did need two people. It's just he wasn't one of the two people.
Yeah. All right. So, is it, like you said, you told them that you were not a programmer.
Mm-hmm.
So was there any kind of research that had to go into it?
I mean, they saw my background in newspapers. They saw that I'd worked somewhere for a couple of years. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. To longevity, I think, was a big part of it. And, It was about what games are you playing right now? What do you know about games? And the fact that I could go all the way back to PC stuff, that I could go back to the 2600 on Atari if you really want to go back.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew everything there was to know. And I think a lot of people train for this job and don't even realize it. Maybe they have a save game and they go, I wonder if I try it this way, what's going to happen? And then they'll go back and do that. Or they say, well, what if I save here and then I try to reload from here? Maybe that'll do something. So in a way, a lot of people are testing. And I found that's just one of the things I was doing, was fooling around with a game was half of the job.
Yeah, there's some games that actually lend themselves to that, though. Because I know one of my favorite games, and that's why I mentioned the very disappointing reboot in my intro, was the Mass Effect trilogy. I have played my way through those three games many times. I've played as the default Commander Shepard.
Mm-hmm.
I've created my own male and female versions. I've gone Paragon. I've gone Renegade. I've done everything in between. I've literally played through that trilogy a good 7-8 times, each time trying to do something differently. So when the new one came out, I was like, oh, great. This is fantastic. And then I started playing it, and I went, okay, I don't hate it as vehemently as some of the other internet trolls, but definitely pales in comparison. They rushed it out, and I understand why they did, because it had been a number of years since the last game.
It's still BioWare, right?
But yeah, and a lot of those people got either fired or reassigned. They completely shut down the office that put that game out and either fired them or dispersed them to other areas of BioWare. That's how disappointed they were in the game.
Well, you know, these RPG games are just a massive amount of testing. There's so many possibilities. So things fall through the cracks quite a bit. I'm always amazed why Bethesda does such a great job considering the massive scope of their games, of how few bugs you'll actually find. Unless you're specifically doing something very out of sync, you're generally going to be all right. But when you look at BioWare stuff, there were problems with Mass Effect. There were all sorts of bugs going on. So I think what the problem with BioWare has always been, and this is not just my opinion, but it's also based on the people at Obsidian. A lot of them worked for BioWare and went on to do Neverwinter Nights. And the scope always outweighs or reaches past the amount of capability they have to test.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is, how much of this do we need to fix before we can send the game out? What we used to say was, we can address that in the next build. And then when online updates were available, it's, we can address that in the patch. So now it's becoming, let's send out a broken game, and we'll see if we can fix those
we'll
final bugs
later.
Before it gets onto the market, because we really want to make our market date.
Yeah, and that's what happens, is they'll send the game out, and people will get it early at GameStop or whatever, and they'll play it, and they go, oh my God, this game is terrible. And like the game will come out on Tuesday, and then that Friday, they go, hey, there's a patch coming.
Mm-hmm.
So just, go on PlayStation or go on Xbox Live and just wait for it. It'll tell you to update it. Go ahead and update it. And you're just like, well, why didn't you guys do this before you put the game out?
Yeah, exactly. Because we didn't know we had this many bugs. And thank you all for reporting so many more. And we're not going to pay you or anything. But thanks for buying the game early.
So basically the consumer becomes the tester.
The gamma tester. Yeah, absolutely. It's happening more and more, in my opinion.
So, you mentioned that you worked at a few spots. Amusing anecdotes, successes, failures.
I think the one that really summed up what I did as a child paying off as an adult was going to Obsidian to work on Neverwinter Nights 2. That's a D&D-based RPG. And I see your control room loves the game. I remember during the interview they said, are you familiar with 1st, 2nd, or 3rd edition D&D? And I said, yes. And I think that's right where I got the job. But it was true, though. It's one of the fondest memories of my childhood was my mom taking us to Pick and Save and seeing how much the D&D red box cost and going, that's a little too much. And she used her fingernail and scratched off the price. And back then you couldn't scan, so they looked at it and they went, I don't know, $4.99 sounds good, and we got it for half off. And all those ridiculous skills that weren't supposed to pay off, and I still argue they do, because you learn your mathematics from there, you learn your storytelling from there, so many skills you learn sitting in a tabletop
game. Decision-making.
Exactly. Yeah. Really interacting with other people, too. There really is a lot to it.
Because you have to work as a team to get through the campaign, otherwise people die.
Exactly. And they said, oh, this is, it's a waste of time. It's never. And then it turns out those very same rules I learned in D&D directly apply to this job that I'm taking, where I'm sitting there with a clipboard 25 years, after I opened up my first D&D game and going, okay, now the strength bonuses are not stacking here, guys. Why would you want to be an anti-paladin if you don't have your strength bonuses stacking? It was really very liberating to say, yeah, all those games that I played as a kid, that actually paid off directly into what I did now. In fact, I wouldn't have got that job if it wasn't for all the games I played as a kid.
It's one of the things that I actually like about RPGs is that they give you the option. You can either just update your character automatically, let the CPU decide how you want to distribute your points, or you can go in and put, 'cause, really, that's the point of playing. Whether it's Dungeons and Dragons or Star Frontiers or any of the paper-based ones, it's the same thing with the video games. It's like you're creating your own character and you're assigning attributes based on what you want that character to do. So, I don't know why anybody would ever have an automatic.
And now it's become leveling up has become a standard of any character you play now. So yeah, the video game industry owes a lot to the tabletop industry. I almost feel like there should have been a check cut at one point in time.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially with things like Neverwinter Nights, any of the Elder Scrolls games, so many of them that borrow liberally from Dungeons and Dragons and those type of games. Just, you would think at some point they would just go to the creators.
Well, I remember everyone got mad because World of Warcraft borrowed so much from Warhammer. And then the Warhammer game came out, and they said, oh, this is such a ripoff of World of Warcraft that every Warhammer fan would go red and just like, I just get out of the room right now. I don't want to talk to you. You don't even know your history.
Like, one of the things that I think, at least for me, as a player, that is somewhat frustrating, is that you have games like you know, the Elder Scrolls, whether it's Morrowind or Skyrim or any of those, where they put so much effort into the story and the world building and the open map and interactions with villagers and side quests and everything like that. But the actual combat engine is so, so rudimentary. It's like, oh, wait a minute. Let me swing my sword. Oh, let me cast a spell. Oh, let me jump over here awkwardly.
Look how awkward it looks if I move it to third person mode.
Yeah, and then you have other games like Mass Effect, where they work so hard on the combat and being able to hide behind things, destructible environment, targeting, shooting. But then, you know, you have things like Andromeda, where the story just lacks, and it's like you almost kind of wonder, as it, like, why can't we get a game that does both, where the combat engine is fluid and smooth and looks realistic, and we have a great story? Like, why does one have to suffer for the other?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think part of that is we cut out whatever pieces of the budget we can. And usually one of the first things to go, in my opinion, is the story writer. They're just like, well, we'll just have the developers come up with something. And I mean, I remember specifically, I think it was Wizards of the Coast. And this was for both tabletop and any video game submissions. They said, we don't want any stories about somebody raising an army of undead to take over the world. It's the most overused cliche. And you see it in every year in video games to this day. It's all about army of undead taking over the world. And that's just, not having a story editor there does things like that. And then sometimes, like you said, you get a great story editor, but you don't have the gaming department to back it up. And it really, I think it comes down to company. Bethesda, in my opinion, does one of the better jobs of all the ones out there. I do like what BioWare does, but it comes with their set of problems. I remember Age of Conan being the big problem was, you have this great world created by Robert E. Howard,
yeah.
And then you have this horrible combat system, and they said, well, you know, we heard your feedback, and we've decided to improve the combat system. And I played the improved one. I'm like, that's it? That's all you got? You know, you can't polish a turd, as they say. So if you had something terrible and you tweak it a little bit to make it harder, it's just a bad combat system that's a little more difficult to work with. That's now, all it is. Yeah.
Now it's just a bad game that's harder to play.
Exactly.
So you mentioned Neverwinter Nights. Was that your favorite game that you ever worked on?
Yeah, that was a big one because, you know, what happened was I was out of the Pentium years for a number of times just because of money coming in. I just didn't have enough money to afford a PC to constantly upgrade. And when I was working at the San Diego Union Tribune back, I think, in 2001 it was, I spent my last $2 on an Ocean Spray orange juice for lunch, and the bottle top was a grand prize winner of a free Pentium. So I won a computer, $1,500 computer from my last $2.
Wow.
And when that computer came, one of the first games I got was not Neverwinter, the one before it, Baldur's Gate.
Okay.
And could not stop playing it. In my opinion, one of the greatest games ever created.
I remember Baldur's Gate.
They did it really well. If I was going to make a D&D based game, this is exactly what it would look like. And so yeah, to hear those guys were looking for somebody and to get into that again was a big deal. So there was a lot of things. I mean, my first team was with Vivendi. I got to work on a DS game with a bunch of people. So it was nice to be manager of an entire team instead of just a few people. The first time I actually fired anyone was at Obsidian, and because we hired temps.
Oh. Okay.
And one of them was just hanging out on MySpace the entire time. And every time I would come by, he would do the screen flip, the alt tab, And then he would send me a save that was, I go, wow, this looks exactly like the save you sent me yesterday. And he'd, no, it wasn't me. And so I had to grab one of our other testers to check his history. And then I sent that to HR, and then that's it. They fired him. And then somebody overheard they were testing a D&D game, and he was adamant about coming in to be the next tester. And he was great. He turned out great. So you got to keep on your toes. You never know what your job's going to be, especially not even just QA, as a PA as well. One day you'll be talking to some programmers and some artists about the problems we've been having with QA. The next day you'll be setting up a booth at E3. So you never know where it's going to end up. And
it's interesting because I used to work for SanDisk, mm-hmm. and basically in their troubleshooting department. So like, let's say you had a memory card that was doing something funky, or you bought an MP3 player and couldn't figure out how to turn it on. You'd call and I'd answer the phone and walk you through the process. And we used to have employees just like that. There was one woman who spent all day on her computer shopping on Amazon. And it's like, yeah. It's like, have you answered the phone at all today? She's like, yeah, like, because... we can see your computer screen, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've had managers that, I can't have my screen. I want people to see what's on my screen. I'm like, why? What are you doing on your screen that we shouldn't be seeing? We're all working on the same game, right? No, you're hanging out on message boards all day. Or something like that.
Facebook or something.
Yeah, and there have been stories like that. Salaried people that just would sit there and read a book, and one of the managers would come up and say, okay, we need to get this test protocol needs to be done. And they would go, okay, great. And they'd go right back to reading, So.
So for... anyone who was interested in getting into that, what would be your advice as far as pursuing working in the video game industry, whether it was tester, obviously programmers, you're going to have to right. know how to write code, but...
Yeah, the basic skills are always there, but there's room for everybody, in my opinion. I was at a point in time, back in San Diego at least, there was a time where I was just like, look, I'll do any job, just hire me, Sony. And then Sony wouldn't call back, or Midway, I think, was in San Diego as well. I got the interview, but I never got the call back,
Okay.
And it was, I think that one is because I specifically said, oh, I'm more of a PC guy than a console guy, but I'll play your console and play your game. And, and they're like, no, we want someone who does nothing but play consoles, So my biggest advice, especially as a tester, is get into beta testing, because most companies out there are looking for beta testers, and it's a lot easier to get a job beta testing than to get a job in the industry. Once you do beta test, you're going to have a relationship with some of the people at the company, which means you're going to have a reference. And if you did a decent amount of bugs, you can say, hey, look, I found these bugs, and I found this crash and this legal issue that would have killed them. That's a big deal, and they want to know that you can actually do the job and that you understand what the job is and not just, playing games all day.
All right, so beta testing would basically be testing before the game hits
yeah.
the market.
And then, of course, have a portfolio. If you're doing art, you should have a few shots. If you're doing programming, you should have something out there. You can make a little app and have something. That's your new business card these days. It's not an actual business card anymore. It's what have you created? What have you done?
Yeah, that's same thing in any industry now. Because even acting, they're telling you, have a reel. And well, what if I've never done anything professional?
Well then
get a camera,
grab
and
your student films, and hope they didn't mess it up.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then finally, don't forget that really good players can actually become testers as well. We've had some that just because they won an award somewhere, it's like, well, of course we want you on this game. You're one of the best players
in
the country.
They play well,
yeah.
So, anything coming up that you can talk about? Any future projects, or
right now we're
sworn
still
to secrecy?
We're still working on a couple of assignments right now. So I usually these days I'm doing stuff at UTest and doing independent contracting. But I am possibly going back to one of my old companies, because keep in touch with your friends, get those people on your social network, because jobs have come up 10 years after I've worked with people.
Nice,
which is the case right now. So.
Nice. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
And I hope it goes well. Thank you so much for coming in today. I appreciate it. I will probably see you this Saturday at the Meet the Pros.
Yeah. And if I get the next gig, I'll come back and talk about it sometime.
All right. That would be great. So remember, listeners, the next time you pick up that controller or get on your PC, or even if you grab some dice or hit a Pop-O-Matic bubble, a lot of people worked hard to create that game. So keep buying the games, keep those folks employed because they enjoy making them and they enjoy watching you play them. Not literally, they're not in your house over your shoulder. That would be creepy. But if you have an idea for a game or a desire to help develop one or whatever, like Colin said, there's jobs to be had. And even if it's just as a beta tester or something like that, it helps get your foot in the door so that you can network. And potentially, as he said, you know, maybe even 10 years later, somebody that you worked with that you developed a friendship or relationship with will offer you a job. So the opportunities are out there if you're willing to take them. Opportunity knocks, you've got the answer. I'm George Brooks. Our guest has been Colin Campbell. Once again, thank you for coming by today. This is the Games Afoot. Thanks for listening. Until next time, bye.